The views expressed in the following program are those of the writers and producers and do not necessarily reflect the views of KORC, its underwriters, or community airwaves.
You're listening to KORC News, Music, and Civics, a program heard Sundays at 1 p.m. and Mondays at 5 p.m. here on KORC. You can also go to our website, korcfm.com, and you can listen to past editions of this program. On Saturday, April 20th, at the Westside Commons Event Center in Hillsboro, the Pacific Northwest Reptile and Exotic Animal Show took place. There were over 50,000 square feet of exhibits with reptiles, plants for sale, displays, people selling collectibles. There were many accessories for owning exotic animals, mostly reptiles, snakes, birds, and animals of that sort. It was a packed couple of large rooms, and I had a chance to walk around and see the exhibits along with my two boys. And in one of the corners of this large convention center was a nonprofit group set up with several kinds of parrots available for the public to observe, interact with, and even hold.
The hardest thing you will ever train a bird to do is do this. Stand here in a room full of people they are unfamiliar with, where they could easily fly away and fly into one of those fans and die. But they are calmly standing here and will be handled by people all day long. And yes, cone-headed parrots do exist. Echo is almost silent. He does not like to talk. African greys also are not totally birds. However, that bird really ends up on her back and home. Like, so she's just kind of the oddball. Did she just poop again?
That's good. Where did she go?
Up on top of the pillows. That's her favorite spot when her mom's not around. And she just likes to do it because she knows it annoys us. Yep, that's okay. We cleaned it up. But, and she will fly this entire room to find her mom.
Bye.
Have any questions for these birds? Anybody?
What kinds of words can they repeat?
Okay, so Jessie is our talker, and she has a lot of words and phrases. Not all of them we have on cue. So, hi, hello, how are you? She does bark like a dog, meow like a cat. She says, hi, Jessie. And those are the ones that we can cue. Now, when they're at home, these two will chatter nonstop back and forth. Matter of fact, the second we put them in the van tonight, I guarantee you there will be plenty of profanity flying back and forth between these two, because they have learned that we won't get mad at them if they're not in a place like this when that happens. So they're like children. You have to teach them the appropriate times to do things.
Can you start a conversation with one of them? Maybe not even have them repeat what you're saying, but just answer a question?
You can. These birds typically don't like doing that when they're in public. Now, if they're at home, yes, they will definitely, you can say something to them and they will start chattering back to you. Sometimes it'll make sense, sometimes it won't. However, I will tell you that there is a woman named Jennifer Cunha, C-U-N-H-A, who has done some phenomenal work with cockatoos, and she has taught them to read, write, and use tablets as calm boards. And we have now learned, through her work, that parrots have all of the same feelings, emotions, memories that we do. They dream, and they will tell us about their dreams in exacting detail. They will tell us about the grief process they're going through for a bird that died 5 years ago. They will tell you that they have fears about somebody having cancer because they knew someone who died of cancer. It is phenomenal, the work she's done. And the things that it has shown us that you would never think that an animal can have all the same feelings, all the same emotions, all the same worries and fears that we do, but they absolutely do. So, yeah, look her up, Jennifer Cunha. She is fascinating, and we all are friends with her and love her work. Yeah.
What is the name of your foundation?
We are Flight Club Foundation. We are a 501c3 registered nonprofit parrot humane society, so we only work with parrots. Good girl, Jessie. And so we are based out of Washington, just south of Seattle. Every year we also put on a huge parrot-centric expo. It is the Seattle Parrot Expo. It is the last full weekend of September every year. It is a free event. So we have a vendor hall like this. It's all related to parrots for the most part. And then we also have an aviary. Last year we had something like 50 different species of birds from around the world in our aviary so people can experience, you know, face-to-face. Look at this. This is what a parrot looks like. And this is what a parrot from another part of the world looks like. We have that. And then we also do educational programming during our expo. So we bring in experts from all over the world to talk about conservation, training, all kinds of fascinating topics. Anything bird parrot-related, we try to bring them in. So,
what's your website?
Our website is www.flightclubfoundation.org.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. We appreciate it. Jesse, say hi.
Hi.
Good girl. Thank you. And she says, look, I'm looking for my treat.
Happier. She let me turn her.
Yeah. Aw, good girl, Echo. So this is our cuddly African gray. African grays don't do this. This is not normal. Like I said, we like the weird around here. Yeah. At least she did that quietly.
I know. You're right in my ear.
Yep.
The Pacific Northwest Reptile and Exotic Animal Show is going to be in Albany this coming August. And there is more information about this event at pacnwrs.com. This is KORC, News, Music, and Civics.
You're listening to KORC News, Music, and Civics. I'm Trevor Serra with your Corvallis City meetings for the week of April 29th, 2024. On Wednesday, May 1st at 6:30 p.m., the Planning Commission will hold a meeting that will be online only. See CorvallisOregon.gov for details on how to join. On Saturday, May 4th, 10 a.m. to noon, Corvallis City Councilor for Ward 4, Gabe Shepard, will be holding Government Comment Corner in the lobby of the Corvallis-Benton County Public Library. Feel free to stop by to say hello and ask questions about your local government, 645 Northwest Monroe Avenue here in Corvallis. For KORC News, Music, and Civics, I'm Trevor Sayre.
You're listening to KORC. I'm Nick Martin. The city of Corvallis may have to consider refunding potentially hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of fees improperly collected from property developers. This was just one of the recommendations made by Benton County Circuit Court Judge Joan DeMarest in a December lawsuit against the city. The plaintiff in the suit, local property developer Jim Boder, claims the city wrongly billed him for what are called infrastructure cost recovery fees, or ICR fees, on two parcels he planned to develop in southwest Corvallis. In the year 2000, the city adopted a law to start collecting ICR fees. According to the Corvallis Municipal Code, these fees are meant to collect for the initial cost of providing a basic level of public infrastructure from developers when they apply for connection and did not previously pay their share of the cost for construction of those basic infrastructures. This means when a newly built house needs to be connected to sewers, sidewalks, water lines, etc., instead of paying for new sewers, sidewalks, water lines, etc., the developer pays a fee toward the original cost of putting in those infrastructures. When the city assessed Boder's properties, they calculated the ICR he owed at $65,400 because there would need to be improvements made to the adjacent Country Club Drive. This is the point where Boder finds fault because, as he argues, Country Club is a collector street built for the use of the greater community, while 47th Street, the street the parcels face, is a local street, and the municipal code states that ICR charges can only be made to local streets. In an email to the city manager, Boder stated his properties will not be utilizing Country Club's infrastructure. He made an appeal to the Corvallis Public Works director at the time, then to City Manager Mark Shepard, which were both denied. He eventually took it to the City Council in January of 2020, where the councilors ultimately sided with the City Manager's opinion in an 8-1 vote, agreeing that he had not acted arbitrarily or capriciously when denying Mr. Boder's appeal. After another failed attempt to bring the case to the Land Use Board of Appeals, it finally came in front of Judge DeMarest at the Circuit Court. In her opinion, quoted from the official record, this is what the judge found. Quote, "The court finds that the City of Corvallis did not follow the plain language of the Corvallis Municipal Code in applying calculating and collecting infrastructure cost recovery charges related to plaintiff's, Mr. Boater's, real property, unquote. She further states that the errors were in the city council's confusion on the matter during the January meeting, city attorney conflict of interest at the meeting, and possible mishandling of the matter by the city manager. Under the judge's orders, she annulled the January 2020 City Council vote finding that the city manager Mark Shepard did not act arbitrarily or capriciously, and ordered that the city refund Mr. Boater his full ICR payments plus 9% per year within 30 days of the opinion letter, then ordered the city conduct a proper hearing for him. She also recommended the city should conduct an independent audit of the ICR collection methods to consider the scope of the problem and consider refunding improperly collected ICR fees, saying all ICR charges since the original passage of the law back in November 2000 are suspect. Both Mr. Boater and the city were not aware of the judge's opinion letter until recently, when the former city attorneys transferred their documents to the new attorneys. According to the Gazette Times, both parties are working on a final order for the court. Thank you to the Gazette Times article entitled, "Judge Takes Corvallis to Task for Way It Collects Developers' Fees," for some of the information provided in this story. You're listening to KORC.
Any local environmental writers out there? There's a locally sourced writing contest hosted by OSU's Spring Creek Project in partnership with GRIST, a nonprofit independent media organization dedicated to telling stories of climate solutions. Together, they host the 2024-25 Environmental Writing Fellowship and Residency on the theme of climate fiction. The winner of GRIST's annual Imagine 2200 Climate Fiction for Future Ancestors short story contest will be awarded a year-long fellowship to continue or expand on their climate writing project. The Spring Creek Project, centered at OSU's new PRAX Center for the Creative Arts, make that PRAX, invites people and communities to explore ways of living just and joyful lives with one another and the planet. Some of these communities gather in person through public events, readings, and residencies. Other communities come together in virtual spaces throughout video and podcast series. Since their founding in 2022, they've hosted hundreds of public events and more than 1,000 creative residencies. Spring Creek hosted events throughout the year on Oregon State's campus and in the Corvallis community and surrounding area. Their events are free and open to the public. GRIST.org founded Imagine 2200 as an invitation to writers from all over the globe to imagine a future in which solutions to the climate crisis flourish and help bring about radical improvements to our world. The series celebrates stories that are rooted in equitable climate progress, creative climate solutions, and community-centered resilience. Writers are invited to submit original fiction of 2,500 to 5,000 words. There's no entry fee to apply. GRIST Contest celebrates short stories that offer vivid, hope-filled, diverse visions of climate progress. These stories should explore the challenges ahead and also offer hope that all of us can work together to build a more sustainable and just world. Through rich characters, lovingly sketched settings, and gripping plots, the stories welcome you into futures that celebrate who we are and what we can become, and maybe inspire you to work toward them. GRIST invites you to read the latest Imagine 2200 collection to learn more at grist.org/imagine2200. Samples of titles you'll find online include To Labor for the Hive. A beekeeper finds a new sense of purpose and community after helping to develop a warning system for floods. The Last Almond. As California prepares to destroy a levee and sacrifice its last remaining almond farm, its caretaker remembers the toll floodwaters have taken on his family. A Seder in Siberia. The arrival of a surprise visitor at a family's Passover celebration reveals the true story of how they came to be climate exiles. Cabbage Kura, a prognostic autobiography. Across generations and a changing world, an Indian family preserves its traditions through food, dance, and the latest communication fads. These titles and more are at grist.org/imagine2200. Spring Creek Project will award the fellowship recipient a $3,000 honorarium, which is in addition to the contest prize winnings awarded by Grist. The fellow will also receive up to 4 weeks in residence at the cabin at Shot Pouch Creek and ongoing support from Spring Creek staff. The submission deadline for Imagine 2200 is June 24th, 2024. For KORC News, I'm Lava Lamp Larry.
This is Alex Huff for KORC's News, Music, and Civics, and you are hearing the sounds of a jubilant community of skateboarders in downtown Corvallis celebrating the opening of a hard-won expansion to the Eric Scott McKinley Skate Park. In January of 2022, the Corvallis Planning Commission voted to approve a new Corvallis skate bowl at the Eric Scott McKinley Skate Park. With the help of Oregon-based Dreamland Skate Parks and the Benton County Skateboarding Alliance, the new bowl has finally opened in 2024. McKinley was a modest skate park built in the year 2000. In response, the Benton County Skateboarding Alliance was formed to set Corvallis on the path toward a more professional skate park. It was a long and difficult journey that included many meetings, proposals, and fundraisers. Altogether, it took about 16 years to make this bowl happen. On April 27, 2024, the ribbon was cut for the official opening of the new 2,812-square-foot advanced-level skate bowl right next to the existing bowl, now geared for beginner and intermediate skaters. This project has added a total of 3,000 square feet to the park as a whole. Here is Parks and Rec Director Meredith Pettit just before the ribbon was cut.
The story of this project is really, I like to say, one of patience and perseverance. And it was a true community partnership, a real grassroots effort. I'm sure many of you out here in the audience were part of that and remember probably many years ago really dreaming about what this place could be like. And that grassroots effort turned into a nonprofit organization and lots of time put into planning, dreaming, getting the community involved, and a lot of advocacy on behalf of Benton County Skateboarding Alliance.
Just then you could hear a skater yelling, "Thanks, Vaughn," and that is to Vaughn Bowser, the president of the Benton County Skateboarding Alliance. This expansion cost a total of $390,000, with at least $63,000 of that coming from either cash or in-kind professional service donations. The skate park is open from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. daily in downtown Corvallis, where Southwest 2nd Street terminates at Southwest B Avenue. Skateboarding is one of the more accessible sports for people without a large income and, with the increased use of helmets and padding, is an activity that can be enjoyed at nearly any age. Though the new bowl is designed for advanced skaters, there are stairs leading into the bowl for those who would rather start at the bottom and work their way into the high verticals. In other words, you do not have to commit to dropping straight down into the 10-foot bowl in order to use it. It has been designed to also allow BMX riders and those in adaptive sports equipment such as sports wheelchairs. More information can be found on CorvallisOregon.gov. I'm Alex Huff for KORC News, Music, and Civics.
You're listening to KORC News, Music, and Civics. KORC is pleased to be able to present Democracy Now! On a weekly basis during our News, Music, and Civics segment. For more information on national and international news, go to democracynow.org.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I'm so sorry. Is there anything I can do for you right now?
Yes, can you call the philosophy department office and tell them I've been requested?
Philosophy department?
Yes, call the philosophy department office.
Riot police arrest the chair of the philosophy department at Emory University and over two dozen others on campus using tear gas and tasers as a wave of student protests against Israel's war in Gaza continues to spread from coast to coast. More than 500 people have been arrested. We'll go to Atlanta to hear from a Palestinian-American grad student organizer and two arrested professors. Then the Supreme Court hears oral arguments on Idaho's abortion ban and emergency health care.
The doctors are facing mandatory minimum, 2 years in prison, loss of their license, criminal prosecution. The doctors can't provide the care because until they can conclude that a prosecutor looking over their shoulder won't second guess that maybe it wasn't really necessary to prevent death.
We'll speak with the legal director of Pregnancy Justice and take a look at how minority rule is reinforced by the current Supreme Court.
We have a conservative supermajority that was appointed by Republican presidents who lost the popular vote and confirmed by Republican senators representing a minority of Americans.
We'll speak with Ari Berman, author of the new book, Minority Rule, the Right-Wing Attack on the Will of the People and the Fight to Resist It. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The University of Southern California has canceled its main commencement ceremony, less than 2 weeks after it canceled a speech by the valedictorian Asnath Basam, setting off a firestorm. Police arrested over 90 peaceful protesters at USC Wednesday. Nationwide, over 500 arrests have been made on college campuses, including faculty. As student-led protests have swept the country. Just over the past day, new Gaza solidarity encampments and protests formed at Northwestern, Cornell, George Washington University, CUNY, and UCLA, among others. Students are calling for their schools to divest from Israel and stop censoring Palestinian and pro-Palestinian voices and drop charges against arrested staff and students. At Emory in Atlanta, a brutal police crackdown led to at least 28 arrests. Among those arrested was economics professor Caroline Folan, who was knocked to the ground by a police officer while another held her down and bound her hands with zip ties. We'll go to Atlanta after headlines for the latest at Emory. We'll speak with two arrested professors and a grad student. Meanwhile, students at Columbia University, the epicenter of the student encampment movement, filed a civil rights complaint Thursday following arrests by the NYPD and threats to deploy the National Guard. Despite the violent crackdown, students vowed to continue their protests. This is Vincent Doerr of UCLA.
I don't think that our concerns about our personal safety are at the forefront of our minds right now. I think at the forefront of our minds is the violence that Palestinians are suffering at the hands of the Israeli state every day these last 6 months and last, again, almost 80 years.
In Gaza, the city of Rafah remains under nonstop Israeli attacks as Israel prepares to move ahead with its ground invasion. 8-year-old Abdelkarim Al-Kurd described the moment his home was attacked Thursday night.
At night, we were sleeping quietly, my brother and I, in a bedroom. My mother and my grandfather were awake, so when they shelled, the rubble was above our heads and the glass was shattered and the house was smashed. Here, if you want, go and look. The whole house was destroyed. Nothing is left in it.
In other news from the region, a Hamas official said the group would disarm if an independent Palestinian state is established and refugees are allowed to return. The New York Court of Appeals overturned the 2020 rape conviction of Harvey Weinstein Thursday and called for a new trial in a stunning development in his historic case. The disgraced Hollywood mogul was sentenced to 23 years in prison after his 2020 conviction. But the appeals court cited the improper use of what's known as prior bad acts witnesses. In this case, that refers to survivors of Weinstein that testified about their assaults, even though they were not part of the case being tried. Tarana Burke, founder of the Me Too movement, addressed the news yesterday.
We are devastated for the survivors who are connected to this case and the survivors who had found some solace and catharsis in the original verdict around Harvey Weinstein. We also need to understand that the legal system has never served survivors in this country. Carceral solutions won't save us.
Harvey Weinstein's 16-year sentence for sexual crimes committed in California is not affected by Thursday's ruling, though Weinstein's expected to appeal that conviction next. At least 87 survivors have accused Weinstein of rape or sexual misconduct. The U.S. Supreme Court appeared skeptical of Donald Trump's claim of absolute immunity from criminal prosecution for his attempts to overturn his 2020 election loss. This is liberal Justice Sonia Sotomayor questioning Trump's lawyers.
We would be creating a situation in which we would be saying, this is what you're asking us to say, which is that a president is entitled not to make a mistake, but more than that, a president is entitled for total personal gain to use the trappings of his office. That's what you're trying to get us to hold, without facing criminal liability.
Conservative justice questioned whether the charges against Trump constituted private acts or official acts, which could potentially be shielded from prosecution. But a resolution to the pivotal case could be further delayed, possibly beyond November's election, as the Supreme Court weighs sending the case back to lower courts for further deliberation. This comes as Trump's criminal hush money trial continues in New York. On Thursday, former National Enquirer publisher David Pecker told the court he made deals with Michael Cohen and Trump to kill embarrassing stories that would damage his presidential campaign, including Trump's alleged affair with Playboy model Karen McDougal. Burkina Faso's U.S.-trained military forces summarily executed at least 223 civilians, including dozens of children, across several villages in the northern Yatenga province in late February. That's according to a new report by Human Rights Watch, which says the extrajudicial mass killings are part of a widespread military campaign to exterminate residents accused of collaborating with Islamic militants. Human Rights Executive Director Tarana Hassan said in a statement, quote, "The repeated failure of the Burkinabe authorities to prevent and investigate such atrocities underlines why international assistance is critical to support a credible investigation into possible crimes against humanity." Haitian Prime Minister Ariel Henry has resigned, paving the way for an unelected transitional council to temporarily govern Haiti as the nation faces a worsening humanitarian and security crisis. On the streets of Haiti, locals remain skeptical.
We want to know if this council can fight the gangs, if they can win back security, because personally, I want to be able to go back to Port-au-Prince. If they can't fight the gangs, then I'm going to face them. I'm going to become their enemy. They got two missions, elections and security, but security comes first.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said Thursday he wants the swift deployment of a multinational security mission as the transitional government is installed. In Brazil, thousands of indigenous leaders have been rallying in Brasilia this week, calling on the government to recognize their ancestral lands and enforce stronger protections against illegal mining and other forms of exploitation. Protesters also denounced plans to build a railway that would transport grains across Brazil's farming states to ports in the Amazon rainforest. A group of indigenous leaders met with the Brazilian president, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, while others gathered outside government buildings.
In the past, we died by the knife, the bullet, and today we die by the pen, by making laws, by the law, and taking away our rights. This is a huge genocide that can happen within our nation, within the people, because our indigenous land is life. For us, it is forest and life.
A sweltering heat wave across South and Southeast Asia has forced schools in India, the Philippines, and Bangladesh to suspend classes this week. Record temperatures have also disrupted agriculture across the region. The World Meteorological Organization warned Asia remains, quote, the world's most disaster-hit region from weather, climate, and water-related hazards. In Thailand, at least 30 people have been reported dead due to heat strokes so far this year. The Environmental Protection Agency finalized new rules Thursday requiring coal-fired power plants to either cut or capture 90% of their carbon dioxide emissions by 2032 or shut down. Power plants are the second largest source of greenhouse gas emissions after transportation. But climate groups criticize the regulations' reliance on unproven technologies rather than reducing fossil fuel usage. The group Food and Water Watch said, quote, pretending that carbon capture can dramatically reduce climate pollution is nothing but a dangerous fantasy, they said. And the Federal Communications Commission voted to restore net neutrality Thursday in a major win for digital and consumer rights. The five-member commission voted 3-2 to fully reinstate rules established under President Obama and repealed by President Trump that regulated broadband like other utilities and barred internet providers from blocking or degrading certain websites or charging for faster connection. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. A wave of student protest against Israel's war in Gaza continues to spread from coast to coast across U.S. campuses. From California to Connecticut, students have set up Gaza solidarity encampments to call for an end to the Israeli assault and for university divestment from Israel and the U.S. arms industry. University administrators have responded by calling in law enforcement, forcibly removing encampments, arresting students and faculty, and suspending students. More than 500 arrests have been made on campuses nationwide in just over a week. One of the most violent police crackdowns took place at Emory University in Atlanta Thursday. Local and state police swept onto the campus just hours after students set up tents on the quad to protest Israel's war in Gaza, as well as the planned Atlanta Police Training Center known as Cop City. Police were accused of using tear gas, rubber bullets, and stun guns to break up the encampment as they wrestled people to the ground. One video shows multiple officers restraining a protester as they apply and hold a taser to his leg as students around him yelled for them to stop. In an email addressing the situation shortly afterwards, the president of Emory University wrote several dozen individuals, quote, largely not affiliated with the university entered the campus for the protest, disrupting the Emory community amidst final exams. The university later said 20 of the 28 people arrested had ties to the school. Among those arrested were a number of faculty members, including the chair of the philosophy department at Emory University, Noelle McAfee. A bystander filmed her being led away in handcuffs.
I'm so sorry. Is there anything I can do for you right now?
Yes, can you call the philosophy department office and tell them I've been arrested?
Fill up philosophy department?
Yes, call the philosophy department office.
Fire starts to burn, right, and it starts to spread, she gonna bring that attitude home. You don't want to do nothing with their life. When a fire starts to burn, right, and it starts to spread, she gonna bring that attitude home. You don't want to do nothing with their life. When a fire starts to burn, right, and it starts to spread, she gonna bring that attitude home. You don't want to do nothing with their life. When a fire starts to burn, right, and it starts to spread, she gonna bring that attitude home. You don't want to do nothing with their life. When a fire starts to When a fire starts to burn, right, and it starts to spread, she gonna bring that attitude home.
When a fire starts to burn, by Disclosure. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
That was an abbreviated segment from Democracy Now! From Friday, April 26, 2024. For more information about the stories of international and national significance, go to democracynow.org. You're listening to KORC News, Music, and civics.
If you'd like to provide input into our local traffic issues, be sure to mark Wednesday, May 8th on your calendar. On that day, there are two presentations aimed at resolving traffic issues on Philomath Boulevard and Monroe Avenue near campus. The Corvallis Area Metropolitan Planning Organization, or CAMPO, is leading efforts to develop conceptual designs to improve walking, biking, driving, and public transit between 53rd and 15th Streets. You can join the virtual open house to learn more and comment. CAMPO is partnering with ODOT, the cities of Philomath and Corvallis, and Benton County, to identify 10-year improvements on Philomath Boulevard that can be pursued for funding. On May 8th, you have two opportunities to attend virtual webinars at 11:30 a.m. or 5:30 p.m. These are duplicate 25-minute sessions followed by questions. Register at corvallisareampo.org. The City of Corvallis and OSU are collaborating on another project, which will develop a conceptual improvement plan for Monroe Avenue between 14th and 26th Streets. Both the City and OSU recognize the importance of this corridor as a connection between the community, university, and businesses and organizations that share its frontage. The plan will focus on enhancing the safety and comfort for people walking, biking, driving, and accessing transit as they travel along Monroe. OSU and city staff, along with the consultant team from Kittleson and Associates, will be sharing information gathered from an interactive mapping exercise and survey, as well as some initial corridor improvement concepts. All are welcome to a community open house Wednesday, May 8th, 6 to 8 p.m. This one will be live at the Corvallis Community Center on Northwest Tyler Avenue, right off Harrison. So two opportunities for some information and input into two important traffic projects, both of them coming up on Wednesday, May 8th. For KORC News, I'm Lava Lamp Larry.
On Saturday, April 27th, there was a gathering above the Castor Restaurant at a place called Conundrum House. And you may have heard of Bounsky on KORC. Bounsky is a game that combines elements of several other games. And I am here with the creator of the game, Justin Schwartzman. How's it going?
It's going great, Dan. How are you?
Doing well. Why don't you tell the listeners what's going on today? It's quite a bit of action going on.
Yeah, so we are having the inaugural Corvallis Open Bounsky Classic Tournament, which is a 16-player double elimination tournament with bouts of classic Bounsky. And classic Bounsky is like tabletop pong skee ball. So you're playing skee ball with ping pong balls, and it's competitive. So you're going up against another player in a tournament.
And the game itself is made up of wood with holes cut into it.
Yes, I make it on a laser cutter machine. And it's all made out of eighth-inch plywood, really quality, good stuff. And it breaks down flat. I pack it in a pizza box.
It measures about 2 feet tall as it stands and around a foot and a half wide or so?
Yeah, about.
And it involves ping pong balls. Being bounced, and there are 5 balls in each round, correct?
Correct. So there are each of the holes are different sizes, and they all represent different point values. And so each round, the competitors take turns shooting all 5 balls and adding up their score. And then they'll alternate who goes first each round. So if you're going second in a round, you know what you have to beat.
And on this Saturday, you have a tournament of people playing this game.
That is correct.
Why don't we go towards the action? Let's go towards the room where all the balls are being bounced and the noise is being created. How many people are in this room?
Right now, there's about 12 people in here probably, and there's some people in the hallway. We have 16 people in the actual tournament itself.
Our Are a lot of these people master performers of the game?
I don't know if anyone is a master of Bounsky yet, because it's still pretty new. And one fun thing about Bounsky is that there's a lot of luck involved. So really, I think the winner today is going to be the person who believes in themselves the hardest.
And what is the winner going to win?
They're going to win a special engraved Bounsky setup with a tournament logo on it, which I'll never make again. So they will get a Bounsky playing set that is a trophy as well as a prize, and it's fun forever.
When did you create this game?
I conceptualized it in 2019, and I released it in 2022.
How do you feel like it's performing in Corvallis so far?
So far, I'm still pretty new in town, but people are turning on to it, and everyone that plays it enjoys it, so good.
When did you get here?
In December.
Okay. Sometimes it would seem that getting people together, especially after COVID times or in the day and age of many options of entertainment, it can sometimes be tough to get adults, us boring adults, together.
It does seem to be a challenge, but I'm pretty sure that once the weather gets a little warmer outside, people will be going out more, and once more people know about the game.
And why don't you talk about Conundrum House? This is my personal first time here. It's located above Castor Restaurant here on Madison Avenue. And what does Conundrum House offer?
Conundrum House is a game store as well as a game library where you can be a member. They have memberships, and then you can check out games. They also have an immersion room where you can do murder mysteries and escape room scenarios. They do events all the time, Taskmaster event, murder mystery events, things of that nature. It's a really cool spot. If you haven't been here, you should definitely check it out.
What are the hours?
They're open from noon to 8, Wednesday through Saturday, and noon to 6 on Sundays.
Is there a website?
There is. It's conundrum.house.
And I know that Bounsky has a website.
Yes, that's bounsky.fun.
Can you spell that?
bounskee.fun.
Why don't we go talk to one of these fun players of Bounsky? I recognize this guy. What is your name?
My name is Dan Rockwell. Corvallis resident for 20 years.
And are you, it looks like you're playing a game of Bounsky.
I'm playing a game of Bounsky. Today's the first time that I've ever played Bounsky. I was lucky enough to qualify for the tournament, and I'm looking forward to trying to win one of these Bounskies. It's a wonderful game involving ping pong balls, holes, and points.
It's kind of like skee ball in a way.
Very much like skee ball. You bounce it or throw it at a target that it looks like a skee ball target with different holes with different point values.
And you stand back 6 feet.
Yep, stand back 6 feet. You can bounce it on the table or you can throw it straight in. And you add up your score after 5 balls.
Very cool. How long ago did you start playing? Today was your first day?
Yeah, I started playing approximately 2 hours ago.
And just for the record, KORC does have a Bounsky that whenever we are at the farmer's market, we try to bring with us if we know it's not going to be a rainy day. Next planned time at the farmer's market is May 11th. In the meantime, though, this recording was made on Saturday, April 27th at Conundrum House during the official Bounsky tournament. There are a number of things going on in Corvallis. You just have to go out and look sometimes or keep in touch with KORC. We announce these events when we get the information. Ooh. And you just scored 100 points. 250 point scores.
Yeah, it feels good. Feels good to be bouncing balls into holes and to score points. It's a great game. I really like it. And I know that my kids are going to like it when they get a chance to play. I'm really looking forward to playing more.
All right, well, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
All right, so everybody that's in the tournament, pay attention to when your time is, and please try to be in the room when it is your time to compete. So right now, Owen and Trail are up first, and I'm not sure who's on deck.
As the tournament takes off, I'm going to take off myself, but it was nice to drop in here at Conundrum House, which is located along Madison Avenue. If you just go by the Castor restaurant, fine dining establishment. I still have yet to check out Castor. Across from the old cheesy stuffed burgers, you go upstairs to the Conundrum House. I must admit, I have not been to the Conundrum House except for this time. This is Dan Krall, and thanks for joining us today on KORC News, Music, and Civics. This is a program that we bring you every Sunday from 1 to 2 p.m., and the program repeats every Monday from 5 to 6. This is KORC.
This is a KORC Community Voices installment. Have you noticed that the world looks a little different lately? Especially on our roads, and especially at night. You might be driving, or just a passenger, or even a pedestrian on the road. And you notice a bright light ahead. What could that be? It must still be a half mile away. As it gets closer, your eyes start to strain, hurting and squinting until you can't see anything at all. It's a struggle just to look straight ahead, even after they've passed you. How did it become this painful just to travel after dark? And how can this go on when we all have to use the roads? It's clear by this point that some portion of our population is affected this way by some modern lighting, particularly in car headlights and public street lamps. In the past 30 years, a revolution in lighting technology has taken place, with the advent of LED lighting, that is, the light-emitting diode. And among the many uses for LEDs, you've probably noticed the change in car headlights and public street lighting. There are many advantages to the more energy-efficient, more compact LED units that have replaced incandescent and fluorescent bulbs. But the biological and physical safety hazards for humans and wildlife need to be considered with this world-changing technology. These two particular applications of lighting, car headlights and street lamps, have tended to use very high color temperatures, resulting in a blue or white hue, as well as extreme brightness to simulate daylight at night. Some portion of consumers demand this for perceived safety or clout, while many others seem dangerously affected by the glare of oncoming traffic or public lighting. Indeed, on a rainy night, the combination of traffic and public lighting reflected on a wet road can result in overstimulation, rendering pedestrians the least visible thing on the road. Data compiled in New York from 2018 to 2023 showed a 28% increase in crashes linked to headlight glare, and more data are following this trend. The human biological system is intricately linked to light wavelengths, which guide our circadian rhythms, or biological clock, to coordinate the essential processes that keep us alive and healthy at the cellular scale. As we're bombarded by bright artificial light at night, more and more scientific research has linked artificial light to a cascade of adverse health problems in many organ systems, from cognitive decline to obesity to cardiovascular disease and beyond. Much research already exists addressing the harmful effects of artificial light on complex nocturnal ecosystems, particularly on disrupting the life cycles of many nocturnal insects and bird species, both of which have experienced precipitous population declines in recent decades. You may have noticed people complaining about these things of late, about the intense glare and the white or blue color temperature these lights use. And that's because the industries and agencies that could be regulating the manufacture of lighting technology for safety and environmental hazards have not adequately done so. While the Code of Federal Regulations does technically limit headlight brightness to 3,000 lumens, about twice what incandescent and halogen bulbs typically produce, that clearly isn't being enforced, and there are other aspects to the technology that cause problems, such as the light density and color temperature. Most state DMVs do not even inspect for brightness or the aim of headlights. Motivated by perceived cost savings, many cities across the United States, including Corvallis, have franchise agreements with utility corporations that have years worth of glaring white street lamps already stockpiled, giving residents and even city government little agency in protecting the night. Paradoxically, some cities have actually increased their energy usage after vastly expanding their public lighting infrastructure. By the way, you can request from the city of Corvallis that shielding be installed on your street lamps to limit the light cast downwards in a radius around the lamp, rather than outward into your eyes or bedroom window. So much stationary light pollution could be blocked by simply installing these shields, such as the egregious glow emitted from the Oregon State University campus, which has the opportunity to be a proactive pioneer in mitigating lighting hazards without compromising student safety at all. What this all means is that, for now, it's up to us, the consumers, to spread awareness and know-how to protect each other on our roads. Check the brightness of your outdoor lighting as it's visible from the road, and install new bulbs or shielding if necessary. Stand in front of your own vehicle to check for brightness, swap out the bulbs if you're able, or have a mechanic or dealership swap them. And spread the positive message about being part of the solution. The Soft Lights Foundation is a national advocacy group headed by Mark Baker, who's attempting to sue the FDA for failing to fulfill its congressional mandate to regulate radiation from electronic products. And this is after years of petitions to the National Highway and Transportation Safety Administration and the Department of Energy, with tens of thousands of reports of personal harm from lighting hazards, requesting formal inquiries into this glaring problem. The road is a commons that we must learn to share, and sensible applications of lighting will benefit us all without compromising our safety. While we can protect ourselves and each other from this systemic problem to some extent, it's important to remember that this artificial lighting crisis is a solvable one. Continuing to contact your city council and state legislators will raise awareness about the hazards of modern lighting and their sensible solutions. And someday, we'll again find a place in our world for the dark and tranquil night.
You're listening to KORC News, Music, and Civics. I'm Trevor Serra with your Corvallis City Meetings for the week of April 29, 2024. On Wednesday, May 1st at 6:30 p.m., the Planning Commission will hold a meeting that will be online only. See CorvallisOregon.gov for details on how to join. On Saturday, May 4th, 10 a.m. to noon, Corvallis City Councilor for Ward 4, Gabe Shepard, will be holding Government Comment Corner in the lobby of the Corvallis-Benton County Public Library. Feel free to stop by to say hello and ask questions about your local government. 645 Northwest Monroe Avenue here in Corvallis. For KORC News, Music, and Civics, I'm Trevor Sayre.
This is KORC News, Music, and Civics. I'm Dan Krall. On Saturday, two people were killed and four others were injured during a shooting at Market Square, and that was in San Antonio, Texas. The shooting happened around midnight near a stage in the 100 block of Concho Alley. Now, while San Antonio may be geographically far away from Corvallis, it hits close to home for me because my brother lives in San Antonio and was actually at that very location and left hours before the shooting. Police said officers near the stage heard a gunshot and saw an 18-year-old man running away. While two officers ran after the 18-year-old, one officer said he saw the man fire and strike a 20-year-old man. The officers then fired multiple rounds at the 18-year-old. He was hit and later pronounced dead at the scene. The 20-year-old man was taken to a nearby hospital where he was also pronounced dead, the department said. Four bystanders, all women, were also shot at the scene. A San Antonio Police Department spokesperson told the reporting agency KSAT out of San Antonio that two were transported with non-life-threatening injuries and the other two were checked out and released at the scene. The police did not say whether the bystanders were hit by the suspect's gunfire or by police gunfire. Videos posted by witnesses showed people crouching and running during the chaos. Initially, six people were said to be injured, but it was later corrected that it was only four people. The names of each suspect are not yet known. I saw this video on Reddit this morning, which is just kind of a normal, and I hate to say it, a normal part of what we expect of life in America. We do live in a country where it feels that guns have more rights than people, and that if we have not been witness or part of a mass shooting, that statistically, it's only a matter of time, and this is not the way it should be. We should not be afraid of going out. We should not have any less of a reason to get together and assemble, especially after the pandemic and what that did to all of us on a social level. And my brother performs in a band. They are a dad band who do not yet have a name. And even though while some of them may not be biological fathers, trust me, they're a dad band. But when you consider just how it's a mainstay for shootings, not just in places like San Antonio, Texas, or really anywhere in America, it should not be that way. And I don't really have a solution. I've never been armed, and I don't want to be armed. And I certainly don't want to think of my brother and his dad band ending up a dead band. Information provided for this story is thanks to KSAT, who is online at ksat.com. For KORC News, Music, and Civics, I'm Dan Krall.
If you're looking to get involved at KORC, you can email info@korcfm.com. Maybe you'd like to help report the news, share your music collection or ideas, and help KORC continue to serve Corvallis. info@korcfm.com is our email. And if you'd like to head over to the chat room at our website, it is at korcfm.com/chat.
Did you know that Community Outreach, Inc. provides health services to thousands of people in Lynn, Benton, and Lincoln counties? Last year, more than 200 volunteers, including doctors, nurses, dentists, and counselors, treated about 2,200 uninsured or underinsured patients. COI also has a clinic for veterans who are unable to travel long distances for care or those who are scheduled more than 30 days out for an appointment at a VA medical center. For more information on how to access COI's health services, please call 541-758-3000. That's 541-758-3000. You're listening to KORC.
Environmentalists and Popular Mechanics magazine agree. Leaving the vehicle idling is a lose-lose. The long-held notion that you should let your car idle in the cold is only true for carbureted engines. Unlike the old days, most modern engines are warmed up in under 20 seconds. Stagnant air is common in the Willamette Valley, and when you consider the cost of gas, the fact that many sources of air pollution already exist, and we have limited resources with a growing global population, it just makes sense to be mindful and efficient. Nobody's asking you to be perfect. Just be aware of these things. If you're planning on stopping your vehicle for more than 20 seconds, it's a good idea to turn off the engine. Save some money, preserve the long-term life and health of your engine, and keep the air clean for all of us. We're in this together. This message has been brought to you by KORC.